Impact of Influence, the Murdoch Family Murders. This is the unfolding story of a powerful South Carolina family, the mysterious deaths they are linked to, and our quest to bring you the truth.
Hello, friend. We are so grateful you're joining us again. We know you've got a lot of options these days. We've been doing this for almost 2 years now, and it has been quite the journey. So we are in the trial time now for the trial of Alec Murdoch, nationally and internationally covered. And we've been in the courtroom for most of the sessions over the last couple of weeks. I am Matt Harris. Seton Tucker is in Walderboro. She was in the courthouse today. Hello, Seton.
Hello. And speaking of international, I sat next to a man named Arthur, who was from France, and he is covering it for Vanity Fair, I think Europe, and he's writing a book. So I thought that was really interesting.
That is interesting. I got a text from the Daily Mail in the UK today asking some questions. All right, let's get to the big discoveries, the big reveals that have happened over the course of Wednesday and Thursday, even some Tuesday. We've been waiting for these videos. Which one would you like to do first, Seton? Because they are some biggies.
Oh gosh, I don't know. I kind of want to I want to talk about the video first that we see Alec and Paul driving around the property looking at trees. That's the one I kind of want to talk about first because that happened earlier in the evening.
And that is on Snapchat, and we won't play that for you because there's not much audio. They're just laughing and taking a looks like they're tying a four-wheeler to a sapling of a tree and knocking it over, and they're laughing and having a time.
And if you want to see that video, I posted all of the videos to our Facebook page, which is Murdoch Podcast.
The Snapchat was about, we'll just say about 2 hours before the murders. The important part of it is what Alec was wearing, right, Seton?
That was important, yes and no. I mean, he was not wearing the same clothing that he was wearing in the videos that we saw, the dash cam videos after 911 calls and police arrived. He's not wearing the same clothes, but I don't know what to make of that because a lot of people change their clothes later in the evening. You know, maybe it had gotten dirty. It is definitely something to look into, but again, I don't know how much to make out of this. I think people are making a big deal of it, but I'm not sure exactly how much to make out of it.
Well, he said he did not change clothes.
Oh,
that's
did
why
he?
They're making a deal out of it. Yes.
Oh my gosh. No, I didn't know that.
Yes. He said he didn't change clothes.
I mean, that is pretty significant. But it's also significant that we see that they're kind of laughing and having a good time. I mean, they're comparing their tree work. I mean, it seems like they have a good relationship.
Yes. And I'm more on that in a second, but I want to go back to the clothes too, because he said he didn't change clothes. If I was the defense, I would say when you asked him that, he meant he hadn't changed since he, you know, had dinner or something, right? And he changed earlier in the day, but he wasn't referencing that. That's how I would write that off if I could. And I wonder, well, you think you found something out about whether or not they've collected those specific clothes?
Yes, we heard from a SLED officer today, Katie McAllister, who searched the house the day after the murders. And she says she's looked through all the bedrooms and the bathrooms. She eyeballed the showers and the drains and stuff like that. And she didn't see any evidence. She didn't see any bloody clothing or anything like that.
Well, and to her knowledge, she's the only person SLED had examined the tubs and showers. So they didn't swab them, as a lot of people have been talking about. It does seem to me, not a SLED agent, but to wait from when the murders occurred until all the way the next day to search the property or to search the house, that seems insane to me.
I agree. It seems unusual that the family was allowed to go back in the house. There were a lot of family members there. And another issue that I have in my mind is why didn't they bring in someone to test all the drains? And the officer said, She didn't really have a good answer for that.
And remember that Katie McAllister said when she did search, John Marvin and law partner Lee Cope went with her.
So let's move on to actually the biggest video, which is a video taken from Paul's phone where he is checking on his friend's dog, and you can hear Maggie and Paul in the background.
Get up, get up. Quit, Cash. Quit. It's okay. Come here. Come here.
Hey, he's got birds in his mouth.
Blah, blah. Hey, Bubba.
It's a guinea.
This is a chicken.
Come here,
Bubba.
Come here, Bubba.
Catch. Quick.
What time is that video recorded again, Lieutenant Duff?
The camera begins at 8:44:49 p.m.
And ends when?
At 8:45:47 p.m.
Nothing further from the state.
Okay, this video, I was in the courtroom when this happened, and it was a noticeable, like, jaws dropping, an aha kind of moment, when, because we've all been waiting to have definitive proof what was on that video. You've heard a little reports here and there. And as you heard, and might have trouble visualizing, but Paul is checking on Rogan Gibson, his buddy's dog, who has a little problem with the tail. Gibson left it there for the weekend, did that a lot. So Paul is in one of the kennels with the dog. You hear Maggie come in. Her voice was the one that says, she has a bird, then it goes to a chicken or a guinea. And in the background, there's a male voice. And Alec kind of has a high-pitched voice. And he's calling for his dog to come in and get into the kennel. Now, Rogan Gibson said he's a Murdochs are a second family. He's so tight with them. So he knows Alec's voice, or Big Red as he referred to him. And he said, eventually he said, 100% certainty, that is Alec Murdoch's voice.
Yes. Before we get into what, you know, Rogan Gibson's testimony, from watching the video, we had seen from the defense that they described this video as convivial, of loving family. And then we heard from other places that maybe it was more contentious. To me, watching it, it just seemed like normal people. I didn't take away from it as being this big love fest, or certainly not any sort of argument. What were your thoughts?
Same thing, just common conversation. But I would think, though, and obviously speculation, by the way the video was taken by Paul, it's very easy that Alec Murdoch did not know a video was playing at that time.
I think it's highly possible. And Matt, tell them why this video is so significant, the timing of it.
Well, the timing is everything. The timing is huge. Because remember, Alec Murdoch multiple times, said he never saw his family, as in Maggie and Paul, after dinner. After dinner, they leave, he takes a nap, gets up, can't get a hold of him, gets in his truck at 9:06 and goes to his mom's house.
Yeah, he says he never saw them and that he was taking a nap. And he actually says that two times in law enforcement interviews very shortly after the murders.
And the time gets even more important. Well, two things about it that make it important. One is he is talking to his friend Rogue, and they're going back and forth. He calls them. They talk for like 4 minutes or something. And he says, why don't you FaceTime me so I can see the dog's tail? Paul FaceTimes him, but the signal's lagging, he says, because there's bad signal out there. So he hangs up the FaceTime and starts the video. The implication is, well, if he's going to video, you'd send it right away after this 11-second video. But the video never gets sent. The only reason they find it is it's in Paul's phone when they finally get into Paul's phone. So video is never sent. And that is big time important, because from the time that video ends till there's no activity anymore on Paul and Maggie's phone is only about 3 minutes. Only about 3 minutes. Paul's phone, last activity is 8:49:35. And the video is just 3 minutes before that. Maggie's phone is also stops having significant activity as well at that time. So the thought that Alec Murdoch could be there, give or take some seconds, 3 minutes before what appears was the time of the murders, is insane. The defense has got its work cut out for him, explaining why he never said he went there and how the murders occurred in the short time between Alec Murdoch there and getting in his truck, driving to his house, and then taking off in his car and not hearing gunshots.
Okay, but the morning before we hear these videos, we had a lot of cell phone technology that was brought onto us, and it was actually really confusing to me. I mean, there were some significant things that stood out to me. We had this hour time frame that appears that Alec's phone was not being used, which I guess when he was taking the nap, but then he was seen in this video. But the biggest question I have is about Maggie's cell phone and when it was discarded. And that actually came up again in testimony today. And I was confused. We actually were both confused. We kind of almost had an argument about it last night.
What happened today? Because the way I asked multiple people at the trial, and then I asked a guy I did a news interview with today, and most people seemed confused. They didn't even have an idea of what it was, because I don't think it was drawn out very well by either side. I think they should use some graphics and some signs and some stuff to show.
Okay, we have followed this case for a very long time, and we're confused. I can't imagine how confused the jury must be.
Right, because there's a steps issue, because Maggie takes 59 steps, 8:53 to 8:55. However, there's issues with the text and whatnot, and it doesn't appear that she's the one taking the steps, because the murder has happened by then. Alec has no.
Well, maybe, maybe her cell phone stopped meaningful activity.
Right.
It seems like that could very well be likely, but that's not 100%.
Not 100%, but the way they set it up was, yeah, certainly not 100%. But the fact that she was responding to these texts from John Marvin back and forth and doing, you know, quickly and having these conversations and suddenly nothing suspect.
Agree. So did you think, like, what I took away from it, again, I could be hearing this all wrong, and I'm hoping it's explained better in further witnesses. What I took away from it was there is a strong possibility that Maggie's phone was not discarded, couldn't have been discarded by Alec based on when his car was leaving and how it was found a half mile away. Again, I was really confused about this. So my mind is really still very open to this. I just don't fully understand it.
I believe that after the defense did their thing, then the state came back up and I looked through my notes. It doesn't appear. They went through all Alec's steps, and from 8:10 to 9:02, he has no steps. And the defense was trying to say, well, if Alec was walking with Maggie's phone, he would have steps at the same time. And I'm thinking, but not if he didn't have his phone. If he didn't have his phone, the steps wouldn't be at the same time.
Well, it didn't seem like he had his phone for an hour, but I just had big questions about the disposal of Maggie's phone and whether it was possible for Alec to be the person to dispose of it.
And the state or the defense, even in the opening, talked about how could he be in two places at one time. He's in his car at 9:06, which is at the house, we're assuming, at the Moselle house. The phone ends up on the side of the road, and it's because of this moment when this orientation, they call it. That's when you take a phone, and like if you're taking a picture sideways or straight, or you pick up a phone and you turn it around, that's called orientation. And at 9:06:12 to 9:06:20, Maggie's phone shows orientation. The screen goes on at 9:05 and off at 9:07. So what they're saying is, how could Alec be in two places at once when the orientation happens, which could happen if a phone is tumbling down a hill or thrown, is what they talk about. It could happen that way. So at 8 seconds, it's tumbling. So if that's when it was tossed, there's no way they're saying it could be Alec because he was getting in his car at the house at that exact time. However, I believe that when the state continued their the testimony, the expert said, if the phone's screen is off, if the screen is off, it will not record orientation. So therefore, in my mind, Alec, he calls right during the orientation time. It rings. He picks it up, looks and fiddles with it. Orientation. The screen goes off at 9:07. That's when he could throw it, because there's not another thing that happens on that screen till 9:08:56, which would light it up. So he has a minute and 56 to throw it out the window, and it would not record orientation. That's how I took it.
Well, there were questions today that were brought up. There was Hightower, who is employed by the 14th Circuit, and he was the one to find Maggie's phone. And it was unclear if how the phone was found. There was a little tilt. This was brought up on cross, and there was a piece of grass over it. If the phone was tossed, would the phone have come back on? And I feel that we will hear from more experts about this, because again, I'm still very confused about this.
Yeah, and I didn't make it clear. That's how I took it, but you're right. There will be experts. There's no question. There'll be more experts, because remember, this is all the state's case. We have not heard any of the defense's case other than just doing things on cross. But the time that the state is pinning it down is Paul's no action after 8:48:59 and Maggie's locked 8:49:31. It was interesting. I don't know if you caught this. Jim Griffin gets up. Was it Griffin? I think it might have been Griffin, who gets on and says, at one point, there is Maggie's phone gets a 1 second camera activation. So that is when the camera is searching for a face. Or
I noticed that.
And he says, is it possible that maybe Maggie was trying to get her camera to take a picture of the people who were killing Paul? Like how he slid that in there. But I that's might be a little bit of a reach. But it's doubt. That's what he's there for.
It is doubt, but I would say overall, Wednesday day, I don't know what day we are on this murder trial. I feel like we're in a marathon. But that day, I did think that it definitely leaned very heavily in the prosecution favor. I mean, they were successful in hammering in the point that, there's this 844 video. He says he's taking a nap. Either he is being untruthful, or he doesn't remember the last time his wife and son were alive, which doesn't seem plausible.
And even if they can say, oh, I forgot I went out there for a minute, you've got 3 minutes to not hear gunshots.
Exactly.
And I here's how I saw the day play out. The state wins big by the videos we mentioned, the video, the Snapchat, the video 844. They win big with that. The state is going to have to find a way to say why Alec was there and he didn't hear gunshots or he got out of there. The points that the defense was hammering was how much love there was between Alec, Paul, and Maggie, especially Alec and Paul. His friends were saying how the apple of his eye, and they showed the birthday video, which we talked about how much they love you. He loved his kids. He loved them, loved them, loved them, loved them. And this is Memorial Day. And Alec was like the nicest guy with his son. They went and never missed a Little League game. So that picture he's painting there is, the defense is painting, I think, is to say, how could this guy who loved this boy this much, no matter what the circumstances, shoot him point blank in the head? And that is what the prosecution is going to have to paint a picture for the jury.
Let's talk about Rogan Gibson's testimony. It actually really humanized Paul. Him talking about it and make the things that they like to do and all that really made me sad. And he did confirm that it was like in this video, and Rogan is the one who was talking to Paul about his dog. But it was actually really sad to see. Yeah. And Rogan describes the relationship with Paul and his dad as really good. He also mm-hmm. describes the relationship with Alec and Maggie as good. I mean, I don't know if a friend would know that. A friend pointed that out to me, and I was like, yeah, well, that's true. It almost seemed, you know, he did point that out, but it almost seemed as if he was testifying in favor of the defense at points. Did you feel that way?
Yes. Well, and yes. I felt like he, also, I should point out, his voice cracked a few times. I mean, he's talking about his good friend, right? They know each other since they were like 12 or something like that. I do think that he was trying to make a point. I don't know if he was trying to make a point because he was asked the questions. That I think he's the one who said the apple of his eye, what Paul was. And it was obvious that when you looked at Buster and John Marvin, it was an emotional time for them as well to see, you know, their buddy up there who was part of their family. And he described the names that he used to describe the nicknames of Rooster and things like that for everybody. And it really did show Paul in a different light than we have even heard this entire year and a half we've been doing this podcast. And so the jury's hearing that too. So I think it was pretty powerful.
Did you notice at the end that when on recross, the prosecution said, did you really know Alec? And
yes.
He said, yes. And then he said, no, but did you really know Alec? And he paused and he said, yes.
Yes, which was obvious the way that Creighton Waters, he was just hoping. When did you really know him? Now that you know what you know, do you really? And he's like, yeah, I mean, okay, you're trying to get me to say that he was a fraud and he's a murderer and he steals a bunch of money, but the way he treated me was the way he treated me.
Yes. And next we hear from Will Loving, who was another friend of Paul's. They grew up together and spent a lot of time at Edisto.
And they were going to live together in Columbia. That was their plan.
Yes.
To go get a house. In fact, last time Will talked to him, I think Paul was talking about getting a hot tub for the house, and that put a little giggle to some people. So this is Will Loving is the one who identifies for the first time that I've heard the second or the replacement, I should say, blackout gun. And he knows this because they went and bought this red dot sight. Because if you remember, just to backtrack a little here, Alec initially buys Buster and Paul these high-end, I think they're like $4,500 a piece, blackout rifles. And Paul's ends up missing, I think sometime around 2019. So Alec goes and buys a replacement, but he doesn't put the night scope on it. He doesn't put the suppressor on it. So it's a lot cheaper. And we weren't sure what happened to that blackout gun. We know Paul's was allegedly stolen or he left it somewhere or something. So this shows that replacement blackout gun. And he talks about firing it because they got the sight on it outside the gun room, which is where law enforcement found the spent blackout shells. So the tie-in there would be if they can prove those shells match the shells next to Maggie's body, came from the same gun, then there you go. There's your weapon, even though they don't have it, because that replacement gun is missing. And interestingly enough, he described it differently. He said it was tan, but the replacement rifle was said to be black. So I'm a bit confused. Maybe he just was mistaken.
Yeah, I'm not sure, but also kind of a big bombshell that happened during this interview was the bringing in of some of the financial crimes.
This is how he did it. It was the very last thing the jury heard of the day. And it was one of those where me and the other people in the courtroom all looked at each other and our jaws just were like, what just happened? So Griffin, who's not usually a theatrical kind of person, but during the cross, and you'll find out why he was able to do this, maybe, Griffin asked if Gibson was aware of the wrongful death lawsuit against Murdoch that stemmed from the crash. He said to Loving, do you know anything about Murdoch being confronted on the morning of June 7th, 2021, about $792,000 of missing legal fees? Loving said no over Griffin's objections. He went into, you know, about the event that was going to take place because of the wrongful death lawsuit. He says no. He asked him about his, do you know anything about Alex's financial situation? Do you know how much is in his checking account? It was questions like that over and over and over again. And it was nutty. There was all these objections. Didn't matter. Day was ended and the jury was sent out.
I was attending today and the first thing Gibson did was kind of address some of these things. And I guess Griffin's objection was it was totally inappropriate, which he said was not a legal objection. And
yeah.
Then I know. And then he did say that some of the questions that Griffin asked opened the door. And the questions that the state said were allowed, but it still hasn't been decided if the rest of the witnesses that have been called by the state, it hasn't been determined if they're going to allow the rest of these financial crimes in. So what they're doing is they're allowing these witnesses to testify in camera. So the jury's not in the room and okay. We see it. And then the judge is going to make a determination of whether he thinks that this is admissible.
Now, who went on the stand today?
Well, we did hear from Jeannie Seckinger, who was the financial person at PMPD, and she's the person who confronted Alec about some missing money the day of the murders of Maggie and Paul.
And I think this is interesting, too. I didn't mention this in the Memorial Day birthday party for Alec, that in the video was Chris Wilson, who is the one with that $700-some-thousand check that Alec was supposed to give into his law firm that Chris Wilson gave to him. And Chris Wilson was in that video, which also kind of opened the door. Like, who's that? It's Chris Wilson. That's his best buddy. Was Chris Wilson on the stand today?
Yes, he did testify. And we should find out soon if these witnesses will be allowed to testify and if the jury will see them. Because what's going to happen is all these witnesses that testified today will have to actually testify again in front of the jury if these financial crimes are allowed.
Oh, wow. And I would warn, this time I'm an attorney, but if you are the prosecution, don't bore the guys to death with real nitty gritty. The Russell Lafitte trial was boring as all get out. Don't bore your audience with just get the point across, right? And move along.
I believe tomorrow morning we'll hear from a few more of these financial witnesses without the jury. And then tomorrow afternoon, we should hear from some more SLED officers with the jury in court.
That's going to be great. And then we're still waiting on Cousin Eddie, too, right? That's going to hopefully happen soon. I want to give a shout out to some folks, Grace Ann, Martha Sue, Mary, Angela, Jennifer, some of the folks that showed up the courtroom to say hi. And also, when I was doing the Court TV live stuff, I'm going to be on Vinnie Politan almost every night from 8 to 9. They came into the restaurant where he's broadcasting from and said hello and had a girls' weekend of watching the Alec Murdoch trial.
Yeah, and it was crazy. I actually had several people come up to me in the courthouse and just around. We had Libby and Kathleen and a man who came up to me and was really super nice. He said that he loves our approach, that we're really try to be very fair. And I ran into him again after the break. And he said he talked to his daughter, Julie, and she was a big fan. They lived just right down the road in Cottageville. So I thought that was super cool. And Michelle and Macy. And also, thank you, Fitz News, for keeping my phone in safekeeping during the trial.
And Vinnie Politan and Shanley Painter, just love her. She is a was an attorney, and now she works for Court TV, and we had a good time. I am always grateful. We are always grateful that you spend time with us. I will get to your emails at mattharrispodcast@gmail.com. Patience a little bit, because this is crazy when you do the trial because you don't have your phone. And you can't even imagine how much you miss being able to bang out a couple emails here and there. And so you're doing the trial for 8 hours with no phone, then doing the TV with that phone. So I'll get to them, I promise. You have some great questions.
I agree. Again, you can't multitask. It's very disconcerting. So if I have missed something, I'm really trying to get to your emails and your comments. And I apologize for the delay. And if I forget you, you can reach out to us again.
And you can reach out to us, Murdoch Podcast, on Facebook, murdochpodcast.com, mattharrispodcast@gmail.com. As I said, we are always grateful, and we will talk soon, friend.